Log Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
All right. We're starting something new here. On It's My House channel here on Blog Talk Radio. working title, Ancient Strategies for Paying Off Debt. And we have a co-host here, Donnie Trowers, and we're going to bring her on shortly. I had to reconfigure my board here. So hold on, Nadia. But in any event, we're going to be discussing strategies on a weekly basis on how you can pay off your debt. Like I say, tonight's title is a working title, Ancient Strategies for Working Off Debt or Paying Off Debt. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Out to move, come out, say.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't, lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something.
All right. To start the week, we put some motivation out there. And the title of this podcast is a working title. We might change it in the future. But ancient strategies for paying off debt. And I believe there were some ancient strategies that were mentioned by Steve Harvey, as well as the audio before him dealing with Jamarian Stiles, who hopefully we shall get on this podcast here soon. Nadia Travers, you there? Hello? Nadia, you there?
Yes, I am here. Yes, I am
here. Okay. What did you get? Did you pick out or detect any ancient strategies from Steve Harvey or the Jamarian Stiles?
I think the Jamari Stiles one was just pointing out that there's definitely a system and a structure for, you know, navigating finances, and, you know, economics plays a large part. So that was very good to hear from him.
What about Steve Harvey and the warehouse and the...
Yes, don't get out of position, you know, stay on Faith Street. That was also very inspirational, and I appreciated hearing that from Steve Harvey, knowing all of what he has gone through, you know, from lack to abundance and overflow in his life right now.
True. Now, one particular strategy, and there's a bunch of them in various ancient books. The ancient book that I'll take something out of tonight would be the Bible, which is
the Bible. How old? Whoa!
About 5,000 years
really
old.
Great. That's a really good question. I can't say exactly.
I think it's about 5,000 years old. I think. I have to look that up. But at least the Old Testament part of it is. But in any event, well.
A quick search on Google says 2,700 years.
All right, so.
Is the oldest biblical text that was found.
That's a long time. Okay, so over 2,000 years, knocking at the door, 3,000 years. There is and there's all kind of debts. The aim of this podcast is basically take an ancient strategy and apply it to your current debt relief situation that you might be in. It could be you might be behind on your rent, mortgage payments, student loans, car notes, anything that you can think of where it's a debt that you want to get rid of it. So the strategy that we're going to hang our nail on tonight is probably on most nights, and there are others that we'll bring up too. But to start off will be 2 Kings 4:1-7.
Four. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Four, one through seven.
Which, now the way Well, looking at it from a Steve Harvey point of view, matter of fact, first thing going to that, and I look at that whole little passage here from 2 Kings 4:1-7. I look at that. There's 2, 3, maybe 4 strategies within that piece. But I'm gonna try to relate it to Steve Harvey, and then of course listen and take it from Steve Harvey to something that we can apply today in 2021 and beyond. Now, essentially, I'm paraphrasing here. There was a lady who was a widow. Her husband recently had died, passed away, and he owed a debt. And if he didn't pay that debt, that the creditors would come along and then take the 2 sons, and those 2 sons would have to work off that debt. Now, things have slightly changed today, but if somebody passes away and if their estate isn't properly set up via estate planning, and it properly goes into, or the estate goes into probate, then in probate, what the government does is make sure, you know, if there are any creditors due money, then you have to either come up with that money or sell off something to come up with the money. They're not going to take any children or anything like that and make them slaves, debt slaves or whatever. But it can get close. So somebody's going to have to come up with that money. And sometimes people do and sometimes people don't. So although there's maybe a $2,000 a year difference, in principle, things really haven't changed that much. In any event, so she went to someone that she asked, you know, what could she do about her problem? I would call that an ancient strategy. If you don't know anything, one of the best things you can do is to solve that problem is to go to somebody who knows how to solve that problem. So strategy number one, at least, if you don't know, go ask an expert or somebody who's actually been through that experience and they can guide you through. So I would say, just off the top of my head, that would be ancient strategy number one. So asked her, now, of course, he had to find out what type of financial resources that she had available. And she stated she didn't have anything in her home, but only a pot of oil, small pot of oil or container of oil or what have you. Now, Nadia, what do you think? All right, let's say, and she discounted that, but before we even go there, just based on what you know about that scripture, can you sense any other financial resources that she might have to extinguish that?
So using what you have and then, you know, asking for help. She not only got help from the expert that she sought in that situation, Alicia, she also
got... That's one
got,
asset.
Mm-hmm.
Any other assets?
And then
that
she
got?
Also... Yes, she also asked, she had her sons to help her, and then they asked the neighbors they went to the neighbors to get the jars and to pour
right,
them
so
together
she
to,
had,
to all
right.
pour the oil.
She had what they would call the prophet Elijah. That was one asset, and asking them was a strategy. Mm-hmm. 2, like you said, she had her 2 sons, so that's, in today's terminology, that's human capital.
Mm.
So that's 2 people. Human capital, you can call human capital subcontractors, contractors, or employees, take your pick. So So that's up. She's up to three assets. She had a home. She had a house. That's four. She had neighbors. Now, we don't know how many neighbors. And she also, which is social capital as well. She had, you can also look at it as community capital. And he instructed her to borrow as many vessels as she could. So we don't know how many exactly, but that, oh, and then, of course, we had that small pot of oil. So that's at least eight financial assets or resources that she had to start with. Now, those are all what I would call ancient strategies and assets, because we have everything that we need. I mean, we discount a lot of things because we don't really look at a lot of things that we have at our disposal, although it might be simple and mundane, to meet that particular need. But those are the financial resources that, I mean, that she had. She could have had more, but we don't. Oh, nine, you can say that her and her son started a business. So today it could be you call it a family business. It could be Inc. incorporated business. It could be an LLC. It could be I doubt if it was nonprofit, but you can make those into assets too. So let's say they formed a family business, and part of the business was going out and taking advantage of acting on their resources of social capital going throughout the neighborhood, the vessels, all that. So they bought it all back home, and they closed the door, and then she proceeded to pour the oil into the vessels. Now, some people might be thinking, this is just a small container of oil. How could she just keep on pouring? I mean, where does the oil keep on? How does it keep on filling up? Any thoughts on that?
That is the supernaturalness of God and God's math versus human math. And, you know, God's divine multiplication versus our, you know, limited ability to multiply. That's what I'm thinking. What are you thinking?
That's one way to put it. Now, with this ancient, with a lot of ancient books, particularly the Torah, the Bible, Old and New Testament, the Vedas, any of the holy books, Quran, whatever, a lot of things that are written in those books are written in symbolism, allegory, and idioms. So I would say, and I don't have a Bible dictionary in front of me, but the oil could be represented by an idea or an income-producing asset. So let's take in Sunday school they might call him a prophet, and today we might call him a financial literacy coach, or somebody with an MBA, or somebody just with a good idea. And they might say, now when she answers, when she says, "I only have a small pot of oil," that person might say, all right, coming from the financial advisor, what kind of income-producing assets do you have in your home? Okay. Mm-hmm. That's another way of saying.
Me? Yes.
No, not
yes,
you.
Yes, in general.
Her.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, in general. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what kind of income, and it could be an idea. it could be, and oftentimes it's just an idea. A lot of times when people need money, it's not money that they really need. It's what they really need is that idea or that, which is their, which will be their pot of oil. Well, oil, in this case is an idiom, represents something that's valuable. So if you've got a valuable idea, that can be monetized and multiplied. Matter of fact, let's play this audio to give an example.
Also tonight, the incredible transformation and the Buffalo Strong spirit that made it all happen. 7 Eyewitness News reporter Taylor Epps shows us how a young lady has completed her very own renovation project.
11-year-old Lauren Nelson had big plans for her summer.
I thought it was going to be pretty fun, but with COVID going on, it was going to be not as fun as it could be.
But things changed one day when she was flipping through an American Girl doll magazine at her home in Attica.
And she showed us a $650 VW bus. My husband was like, that's ridiculous. You could buy your own camper for that price.
So she did just that. Lauren saved some money and started looking. A neighbor just down the road had this 20-foot camper that caught her eye.
And then the one day, up popped a for sale sign, and she squealed the whole way home,
and she started negotiating.
It wasn't very hard. He said $500, and I said $400 because that was the money that I had in my bank account, and he said sold.
Then it was time to renovate.
It was a process. We brought home a family of mice. And so there was a lot of deep cleaning,
but that didn't stop her.
I was very motivated because I really wanted a place where I could just, like, hang out like my own house.
The whole renovation process took Lauren about 2 months, and with the help of family and friends, she was able to turn this into this.
It's called Camp Hygge. It means very comfortable and safe. It has its own kitchen and bathroom, so it's like a tiny house.
So now you're the owner of a tiny home at 11 years old.
Yes.
The whole project cost her $800.
She has 3 envelopes that she puts her money in, give, save, and spend. I think she made a really good choice. She now says she's part of the tiny home nation.
She was able to turn her summer around and hopes to inspire others to do the same.
Which is awesome to see that somebody who's 11 years old had her own vision but now is out there and other people are contacting us and they've gone out and bought a camper to do the same thing. If you're looking to have some big plans in the future, you should go out and do it. Make it happen.
In Attica, Taylor Epps, 7 Eyewitness News.
What up, what up? Another video, and today we are going to talk about how making money is a social skill. Okay, it's a social skill. Now, before I get into it, shout out to Kevin Samuels because he said this a while ago in one.
Welcome to Camp Hygge.
This 11-year-old spent her summer turning the inside of this camper from this to this.
I was looking through an American Girl magazine, and I saw a camper for $650 for an American Girl, and it was a very nice camper. My dad said that was really expensive for us, so he said that we could get a real camper for that amount of money. So then I went out and I started looking for one. We saw down the road a house had a camper for sale that I had been looking at for a while. So I really wanted to get it, and the guy said it was for $500. And then I told him $400 because that was what I had, and he said sold.
And the total cost of renovations thus far, $400.
We had looked on Pinterest and saw a lot of cool camper ideas. And I like this Peachy Boho style with lots of plants and different colors and sea glass and driftwood, that style. So I like that, and we decided to paint the camper walls white and then our kitchen cabinet turquoise. So this is my dining area. I got this from our potting shed that had dust and dead flies all over it, so we cleaned it up and that's what we got. We planted some plants from Dollar General in there. We have All of this on the backside came from our house, except for that one picture back there from Dollar General. And a fun fact about these, this table and these cabinets, they flip down into a bed, and so does this. And then over here we have the kitchen, where we can't quite cook stuff yet, but it's very decorative. And this is our refrigerator, that's the inside of it. And then if we walk a little further down, we have right here, these are very nice decals that we got for $1 at the Dollar Tree. And then if we walk a little bit farther in here, we have a mirror that we painted the edges that came with the camper originally. And we have a closet over here, and it's the one little camper I got this side from my neighbor who made it for me. And then we keep walking, and now we're in the bedroom. So we have four beds in here, and we got these really cute mattresses off of Etsy.
She painted most of it herself. She had her grandma come over the one day and help with the cupboards, but I would be gone for the day, and I'd come home, and she'd say, like, you could tell, and I'd say, how long were you in here? And she's like, oh, I painted about 4 hours straight.
Well, I'm very creative and artistic, so I love to paint and draw and stuff like that, so it kind of came to me naturally.
With this COVID thing, it's kind of interrupting her fun that she wants to have in it, but she's making the best of it.
Lauren hopes to be able to have friends over soon, but a chance to get away from home works for now.
I hope you enjoyed my camper tour. Thanks for stopping by.
This is Inside Edition Digital.
Okay, Nadia, well, apparently with Laura Nelson, she's probably 12 years old now. Her oil was in the form of an idea that she got from her father to get an inexpensive camper, which she found one, fixed it up, and then it's hers. However, if we take this into the context of, what if Laura, you know what, one day, what if Laura needs to pay off a big debt, a student loan or whatever, because she's only 12 years old now. Well, then she knows what to do to, and instead of, you know, stopping at one, if she's got like a $20,000 debt, then okay, buy and fix up and sell 15, 20 campers, and then she can extinguish that debt. But anyway, what's your take on it?
That's great. So I think you mentioned it before, essentially creating something or investing in something at a lower cost than what you're able to then sell it for later. So basically being able to, you know, make a profit from, you know, investing in fixing up something or invest in making something, and then when you sell it, you're able to make that profit and help yourself to pay off that debt that you might have.
Right. So it's an ancient strategy. The oil could be anything. It could be baking cupcakes.
You said idea.
Right.
Ideas come in all forms and all shapes.
Right, and that's the oil that a good idea is just never... It never runs out. You just keep on pouring it until you decide to stop. So hopefully that takes some of the mystery out of that. So going back to that particular ancient piece of strategy. So that's what they did. they filled the containers up full of oil and then after they did that, she went back to what we would call in 2021 a financial advisor or financial coach or guru, whatever you want to call him, and he simply said, sell the oil, pay the debt, and they'll live off the rest. So
yeah, that's an amazing principle.
Right, they created a business, a family business, because once it's formed, it can go from generation to generation. And I mean, it's really only limited to your imagination. And they can even expand it into other neighborhoods or, you know,
or
like
teach people that too as another model.
Yes. Now, you know any modern examples that we can apply those ancient scripture? I mean, that ancient strategy. That,
well,
I think
what you said was accurate previously about whatever your idea is, starting a business. I do have someone I took a class with when I was in my certificate program for ministry certificate. She had the same issue. She had some debt that she wanted to pay off, and she was led to this scripture as well, and she interpreted this scripture as she wanted to start it. She needed to start a business and then begin to sell her products and then be able to pay off her debt and then live off the rest. And from what I understood, she was trying to bring together something similar to Blue Apron, but for her local community, and having subscription boxes. And so she was going to be able to sell the subscription boxes and begin to generate, you know, a profit on what she, how all the different things come inside the box. I'm not sure. I assume she had to pay, you know, a set price for those items to go in the box, but then selling that box on a subscription basis and being able to generate consistent monthly income in order for her to be able to not only pay off her debts, but then it would be a functioning business for her to then live off of. So that was one idea. Every time I think about this scripture, I think about her, and I'm actually going to reach out to her now and see how things have been going, because with people at home during the coronavirus or during the pandemic, I'm assuming that that type of business would only take off because individuals are at home and they're a lot more busy. They need to find quick and easy ways to, you know, shop, and, you know, contactless ways to shop or get food delivery, et cetera. So she was solving a problem, you know, years before the pandemic, like other subscription boxes for food deliveries at your service, where the items for your dinner is delivered in a box for a fee and a price. And then, you know, so I believe she was able to, that was her way of implementing that scripture in her life personally.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Let's see. Okay. We got about 15 minutes left. Let's see. Let's play this next audio and see how this that ancient scripture or ancient strategy applies to this story.
Well, you've heard the phrase, one man's trash is another man's treasure. Well, Steve Shives knows it's true. He's made a fortune thanks to some old scrap parts from a beat-up bus, and it all became a million-dollar business.
Steve Shives turned his backyard business into a million-dollar company in under 5 years.
I'm doing something that I love. I enjoy the fact that people appreciate it.
It wasn't always that way. When Steve and his wife Deirdre married, he was an unpaid associate pastor who earned money as a handyman.
I just couldn't quite make enough. And with that struggle, we started using credit cards.
I would use a credit card to buy groceries, put gas in the vehicle, and it wasn't just one credit card.
Before long, they were carrying $30,000 of debt.
I think we were just irresponsible in a lot of ways, in the ways that we spent money, because we still tithed. We were, you know, we were still faithful in our giving. In my mind, we were being good stewards by giving 10%. What I didn't know is that we were being bad stewards of the other 90.
When creditors started calling, Steve and Deirdre say they knew it was time to take a hard look at their finances.
I had this anger inside myself. You're the pastor of a church and you're teaching people on tithing, and you know, how in the world did you let this happen? And I said, God, I said, if you'll help me get out of this debt, I will never be in debt again, and I'll be faithful to whatever it is you give me.
Steve says that's when the Lord told him to cut his spending, increase his giving, and to tithe on the amount he needed to support his family.
God said, so if $1,000 a week is what you want, then $1,000 a week is what you have to sow towards.
I thought, well, if this is going to help us, and this is what God's told you to do, then we need to do it.
Steve began to work with their creditors to pay down their debt. Several companies gave him the option to settle for far less than he owed. With their debt reduced, the couple increased their giving again.
As we just began to prosper, you know, we'd give more and more, and like, okay, give $150 this week.
Steve says that's when he learned that good stewardship can mean implementing an idea that comes from God.
I got the idea for building this little camping trailer. I built it and sold it on eBay in a day and a half. I started getting messages from people saying, would you consider building another one?
The company Runaway Campers was born. Within 3 months, they sold 9 more campers. The following year, they sold 140. To date, more than 1,500 people have bought one of Steve's trailers. Many weekends, Steve and Deirdre attend rallies to meet people who bought the campers. And when they do, they're quick to tell them about what God has done in their lives.
And they're like, tell me the story. And I started telling the story, and I've told it hundreds of times. We can say, look at what God has done in our life, not because we're living the American dream or we're making lots of money, but look at the joy that comes when you really just totally give yourself to God. He'll give you more, so much more than you could ask or imagine.
Just look at the joy when you give yourself totally to God. Here's the promise from Matthew 25. To those who use well what they are given, even more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who do nothing, even what little they have will be taken away. And Steve walked that out. Here he is, a pastor. He's teaching tithing. He's living tithing, but he comes to the realization, I'm not doing right with the other 90%. I'm living beyond my means. I've got to bring that into line. And then God gives him a wonderful idea, and he says, that's a great idea. Let's start walking that out. And that simple idea turns into a million-dollar business, which is absolutely incredible. To those,
hi, I'm Stephen Shives, and people often ask me about how Runaway Campers got started as a business, and so many times I tell this story, and maybe I oversimplify it at times, because it honestly has been a lot of work for the past almost 5 years now, and so, you know, when we got started, I'm actually standing here next to the very first Runaway Camper prototype, as I called it back then. I never honestly intended to build another one. It was just kind of built out of necessity, and so I've been fortunate enough to be able to buy this back from the second owner this past year, and be able to have this as kind of a memory maker. But you know, when I first built it, I wasn't even thinking about starting a business. I was just doing what I needed to do to support my family. And I was rebuilding a transit bus at the time, and I needed a transmission for one. And I actually found another identical transit bus that the body was just all shot, but it had a good motor and transmission. So I bought it, and I took it back, and I took the motor transmission out of it, and then I went to the scrapyard to get rid of what was left, and the scrapyard refused it. He said, I can't take that. There's more fiberglass on that thing than there is metal. So I took it back home, and my wife was like, what are you doing? Where's that? I thought you were taking it away. And I said, no, they wouldn't take it. So the best I can figure to do is I'm going to take a saw and chop it up into small enough pieces that I can take it off to the dump. And while I was doing that, I started doing some measurements, and I realized I had a wall section there with three windows that was just slightly over 8 feet long. And I thought, what can I build out of that section of windows? I mean, they're nice, solid RV windows, a good solid wall section, and it's an even 8 feet. I can make something out of that standard measurement. And so that's where this was birthed out of. I mean, it was just, that's where the three windows are, and that's actually the side walls of that bus. It's the first and only unit that we ever built with three windows on each side. And some people ask us, well, will you build another, or, you know, why don't you do that anymore? It was just something that was done out of necessity. And out of that was a business that was birthed that a lot of people, you know, refer to it as the American dream, you know, the backyard business startup that, you know, with American ingenuity and the opportunity that we have in this country to basically be anything we want to be and share our ideas with, you know, with those around us. And so it's been a tremendous blessing. And I think back and I think, you know what, if that scrapyard would have taken that old junk bus when I took it in there the first time, runaway campers wouldn't be here today. And so often we don't see around the next corner in life. We don't always realize that some of the stumbling blocks or roadblocks that we come up upon in life are there that guide us or steer us in a different direction that we've yet to see yet. And so I'm grateful for some of the things that have happened that have kind of moved us in different directions over the years, some of the bumps and bruises that we've had. I share some of those stories in a short book that I wrote called Breaking Camp. So if you want to hear the whole story, be sure and grab a copy of that. I hope you enjoy it. But, you know, the most exciting thing about this journey has been the people. We're excited to be a part of hundreds and hundreds of people's lives over the past few years as we've grown and stretched with this business. We continue to research and do the best that we can to continue making a better and better product all the time for the money that you spend. And so, you know, the camper we built in the beginning was not the camper that we built when we built the first 10. And then after the 10, things changed. And after 20 and 40 and 50, things changed. And now after over 1,000 units, we just continue to make changes along the way to offer our customers the very best product for the money. And so we're excited about that. We're glad to be a part of so many people's lives and to realize that what a blessing it is. That when you invest in a runaway camper, you're not just investing in your own enjoyment. You're not just investing in something that you're going to use for pleasure on the weekends every now and then. You're investing in the American dream. You're investing in what this nation was founded on, the opportunities that we have to press forward through our ideas and through our circumstances and the dreams that we have to make the most of the life that we have to live. And so you're investing in that. You're investing in the lives of the families that build these campers, that it supports their families. And you're investing in communities, in our own community, and in the charities that we support. You're investing in work that we do in foreign countries to help impoverished children and families. And so we're grateful for that and for the part that our customers play in that as well as the support and the prayers that come in and the encouragement. Many times relationships we get cards, we get letters and emails and phone calls on a regular basis of people telling us how much the runaway has enhanced their life, that it's allowed them to meet new people and make new friends, and they even have a marriage on the books now because a couple met through their runaway campers. And so we're excited to be part of people's lives, and we're excited that we can share it with you as well. And so stop in and see us at our sales center in Central Florida, or maybe we'll run into each other when we're out and about at a campground or a shopping center one day. But I hope you have a great day, and I hope the story encourages you to keep pressing through in everything in life and make it the very best that you possibly can. God bless you. Talk to you soon.
Nadia, your thoughts?
Wow, that is amazing how an idea has literally, you know, launched a community and shifted other people's financial situation. So like he said, he hopes it's inspiring. It was very inspiring to hear that testimony of how someone was able to take an idea or even take trash, what that that common saying, someone else's trash is another person's, you know, riches or something like that, that's very powerful. It's kind of reminding us to not count for or not despise our small beginnings or not despise what we have, what little we may think we have, because that could be turned into much with faith and persistence and with diligence.
Yeah, and his oil was that idea, you know, after he was turned down at the junkyard.
Yeah.
And I live by a rule. Rejection is God's protection. So in this case, he was rejected by the junkyard and turned it into a multi-million-dollar business. And essentially, he used the same principles as the lady, as the widow in 2 Kings 4, 1 through 7. So same principles, and that guy's about that business is about 2 hours away from me.
Here
in Florida. Haven't met him yet, but
yes,
close
that
by.
Was my next question. Have you gone and
no,
made
haven't
the trip
met him
to,
yet,
to
but
meet?
Haven't met, and I got to go past him to one of my places. But in any event, all right, it's 8:55, so I know we want to end this before 9. So anything to wrap it up, Nadia? Ancient strategies for paying off debt?
Well, there's nothing new under the sun, so we can look back at what's been done previously and essentially contemporize it and recognize that the same God that worked in 2 Kings 4, 1 through 7 with the widow woman.
Over 2,000 years ago,
Yes,
same thing,
he is the same God.
Same strategies that worked then, they work today.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you for co-hosting here. On that note, we're going to say good evening and have a very good week on that note, and rest well.